same old football folk is doing. Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, fam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson. And of course, it's playoff time. Divisional round preview time. Only four games to discuss here today, Sam. So a good 3 to 5 hours worth of content coming your way.
Really quick show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're gonna buzz right through.
Sure.
Buzz right through. Won't talk about anything else. Won't get off topic at all. But, yeah, it's exciting. A lot of people call this, you know, the best football weekend of the year. You know, wild card weekend is generally better than what we just saw last week. Last week, only two competitive games, pretty much.
Yeah.
Throughout out of the six. But divisional round weekend, you're in the final eight. You've got your best teams in the league, generally, or teams that are getting hot and trending in the right direction. So, as I say every year, a lot of people like this as the best weekend of the year. So, let's enjoy it.
Okay, let's go.
All right, let's get into it. It all starts with our hometown Cincinnati Bengals. By the way, every now and again, I might just pull up the belt.
Do that
at any time here.
Here, I'll take a picture of it and then I can tweet it out
of me
wearing
the belt here. Because we are, if you didn't tune in yesterday or listen yesterday, we are trivia champions. We did win. We did take out the tailgate podcast with our trivia knowledge. And if you didn't see the video, go check it out. It's on the YouTube channel. It is. It was a pure luck of the draw that I got a 90s Jags question.
Yeah.
That was pure luck of the draw. But I just have to say, like, in a game where I can answer 90s Jags questions and
help.
90s wrestling questions, I mean, I feel pretty good about that outcome.
Yeah. That's right in your wheelhouse. Like, we're going to have some success if that's the level of question you get.
It is. And, we've asked the forecast. Forget tailgate. They're in the rearview mirror. We're on to the forecast. And the challenge is out for our next trivia challenge.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that'll go as well.
But just say, like, 90s wrestling. If, you know, Eric's not going to know that. Eric and George.
Isn't he?
If George is good at trivia. I just think Eric's this encyclopedia of knowledge.
Yeah, well, I don't have any baseline of where George is whatsoever. But I know that Eric knows everything that's ever happened in a football game ever.
Yeah, but Eric only knows things that are like numbers-driven. Words he struggles with, I think. We might be able to get him with things that involve words rather than numbers.
In what way? How can a football question involve words but not like facts?
No, he'll remember. He'll remember all the names and everything too. Anyway, we'll get to it. It'll be fun. But we enjoyed our first little round of trivia. All right, let's get to all the games. Cincinnati Bengals at the Tennessee Titans. They're kicking off this weekend. And I really love this matchup. And, you know, the Titans still don't know what to make of the Titans, right? Like, really good results throughout the entire season. They're favored by 3.5 here against the Bengals as of right now. Good results for the Titans, but probably the least flashy team of the remaining AFC teams, right? Because, yeah, it's only Ryan Tannehill under center, and Derrick Henry's got a plate in his foot. So, you know, what's he going to bring to the table? Tennessee, just an incredible year, though, of battling through injuries, playing over 90 players, winning games. They're 7th overall in our power rankings. The Bengals are 10th, but the Bengals have that number 3 offense, and they're just trending in the right direction since they put the ball in Joe Burrow's hands more and more
the
last few weeks.
I think that's a really important part of all this, is that Cincinnati do appear to have figured out that, hey, we have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. It's been a while since we could say that. And Ja'Marr Chase and all the receiving weapons, okay, the offensive line is still a little bit sketchy and patchwork and a potential problem, but we've been able to get by so far. We are way better off giving him the football and hoping good things happen than we are doing anything else. So if they continue that, I think that that's their biggest path to success. Like, they have one of the most potent passing attacks in the NFL left in the playoffs, certainly. Like, that's their key. for Tennessee, I'm fascinated by the idea that, like, so Derrick Henry's coming back, right? But what does that mean? Are you getting 100% of Derrick Henry? Are you getting 80% of Derrick Henry? Are you getting, you know what I mean? Like, where is he right now? We know he has a plate in his foot, but, you know, this is a guy who got an injury that typically shuts people down. The people that don't get shut down, that come back, have a pretty high rate of re-injuring it. He is an abnormal human being in terms of being like a 250-pound running back that is exerting some serious forces in your foot anyway. That is going to be a fascinating thing for the kind of in-game management. Like, what is their plan for determining? Because remember, they've been running the ball fine without Derrick Henry.
Right.
Like, Dante Foreman, Dontrell Hilliard, they've been doing a good job. The offensive line still run blocks well. So if Derrick Henry comes back, obviously you're going to give him a shot. You're going to see what he has. How long do you give him before you decide that, you know what, this isn't the same Derrick Henry, and actually this isn't necessarily helping? Like, what do you do? Do you get five carries and you're like, it's not really much of a difference between Henry and Foreman here. Maybe it manipulates the defense differently, but like part of Derrick Henry's mystique and kind of power is if we give him 30 carries, like late in the fourth quarter, that guy's going to break one off for 95 yards and a touchdown and win us the game, right? But if Derrick Henry's only 80% of Derrick Henry, is that still a thing? And are you just like, so do you keep giving him pointless carries that are going nowhere if he isn't doing the same thing he used to? Because in the past, that's resulted in good things down the line. I think that's a really difficult kind of thing for them to juggle.
Yeah, it's because it is a wear and tear type of injury, right? Like if you want to have Derrick Henry for this, you know, the whole game plus next week or whatever, if you are looking forward, you would want to limit him. But you do lose. I mean, that idea of wearing a team down in the fourth quarter and all that stuff, generally overrated in the NFL.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry's had that ability, right? And I don't think you can do that. I always circle back to having answers to what the defense throws at you. I still think if Ryan Tannehill doesn't throw for, you know, if he throws for like under 100 yards, like they've won games with him doing very little in the past because Derrick Henry's been able to take over and break off 65-yard runs and all that stuff. I don't think the Titans win. It still has to be a pass-driven game. Tannehill had four touchdowns against the Texans in that game to seal the number one overall seed. And, yeah, it's the Texans, but I think it's a Tannehill-A.J. Brown game more than anything. And the thing that you said about Derrick Henry dictating the defense, probably the biggest value, right? Just like having a hobbled receiver out there drawing coverage, even though they're hobbled, I think – unless Derrick Henry really is superhuman and he's just going to go 30 carries for a buck 80, I think it's going to be let's help set up Tannehill and A.J. Brown and whatever's left of Julio Jones here.
Yeah, I wonder if they have a plan for if Derrick Henry plays and is obviously not the same guy that he was before he was injured, what do they do? Do they keep giving him the ball because he has got those kind of that history of durability and power late in the game that's been important for them? Or do they say we can put him in there for a few plays to kind of manipulate the defense and get guys to stack the box, etc., but if we actually want to run the ball, Foreman might be a better option right now because this is not like Derrick Henry is not 100% healthy. I think that should be a significant part of their preparation for this game, is sort of gaming out all of those things and figuring out exactly what to do with various different scenarios of how productive Derrick Henry is. Now, this might all be moot. You might get, like, Derrick Henry might be Derrick Henry. He might have come all the way back and looked like Cam Akers did last week, where you're like, oh, okay, great. Derrick Henry's back. The offense is cooking exactly where it is at its best, and all is good. But I think they would be smart to start planning out various contingency options of if he isn't himself.
Bengals have bottom 10 run defense, number 10 as far as run defense grade goes. Larry Ogunjobi out on the defensive line. Did not have the best year. We had him with essentially a red grade, poor grade. Grades that you guys can all find over at PFF.com using the promo code NFLPOD. That's right, 25% off. Using the promo code NFLPOD, and you can get all the extra goodies from Greenline. As an elite user, you get all the grades and stats as an edge or elite user, but you get 25% off using that promo code NFLPOD.
Ogunjobi's another one of those guys. You know, you see this in college sometimes where if you flip their career upside down, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
Like Ogunjobi worst season of his career this year, and it's been getting worse every year since his rookie year where he actually looked really good.
Yeah, and I think he
don't
still
understand that.
I still think he has a little bit of that perception. Was it last year he had that ridiculous 90-plus grade? I don't know, in like the first week, and then he just tapered off. I mean,
his overall grade is a sort of steady decline, but his run defense grade is amazing. It started off at 84 in his rookie year. It's like, wow, this guy's disrupting. This guy's getting in the backfield constantly, making plays. Went from 84 to 67 to 60 to 55 to 39. Like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, sometimes things don't make sense, Sam. I will say, defensive line, whether the grade is great or not, there are some teams like the Bills roll 7 and 8 deep on the defensive line. The Bucks were just straight rotating, right? There is something to that defensive line depth, especially here in the playoffs. So no matter how Ogunjobi's played, still puts more pressure on that defensive line, B.J. Hill, D.J. Reader, but just the depth as well. And usually that's what the Titans challenge. Whether Derrick Henry's running the ball or not, their offensive line is really good in the run game. They have, you know, David Questenberry's become one of the best run-blocking right tackles in the league this year. Call it a system, you know, system right tackle that the Titans have, right? Talk about system quarterbacks. The Titans just keep churning through offensive linemen and maintaining a high standard from a run-blocking standpoint. So Ogunjobi not being there could be a bit of a factor. Trey Hendrickson also, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to go with the concussion that he had last week.
I think he's cleared protocols now. I think he was a full participant the last practice.
Is he full?
Okay.
So,
Ogunjobi, so the run defense has fallen off a cliff every year, but his pass rush has actually been a factor this year. Like, he's rushed the passer almost 500 times, has 8 sacks, 40 pressures. So he has been contributing in that area, which I think is probably the bigger area you lose him or you miss with him not there now. The run defense, I don't understand why that's been getting worse year on year without any other changes, essentially. But yeah, like they need, I think in particular, Hendrickson to be at his full powers. He's been really, really good this year. And that's a real win for Cincinnati. Like, that didn't look like a great move on paper in the offseason, right? Remember, they let Carl Lawson go because they didn't want to pay him, and then essentially paid Trey Hendrickson, who was coming off a career year that was skewed by sacks. So it was good. It was a career year, but it wasn't as good as the sack total made it look.
Right.
And you're like, that guy, that's prime to sort of regress a bit next year and him not quite be the player you think he is. And actually, he backed up a career year, got paid, had another career year where he was actually way better than the last one, and has absolutely justified the money they paid him. I would say he's been like a massive upgrade over Carl Lawson, but Lawson's been out, so it's hard to kind of, you know, compare like for like.
Similar deal to what the Titans gave Bud Dupree, except Trey Hendrickson was more part-time player, breaks out last year. It was still a great year.
Yeah.
Breaks out last year, whereas Bud, we had 4 out of 5 years, which were below average in his career. Both guys got paid. Bud has still not performed well, despite a lot of people think he's a force multiplier out there and makes the entire unit better. The Titans' pass rush is interesting because I think the perception of them is high. And I don't know how much of that was like Sunday Night Football against the Rams. Jeffrey Simmons was pretty much unblockable on a number of plays, and they got home a bunch. And I think the potential is certainly there for the Tennessee Titans defensive line and for, you know, Bud Dupree. Harold Landry with high sack totals this year, and Bud for whatever he brings to the table. But they've got a little bit of depth there, and they've had some of those high-end games, but overall they've been a bottom 10 pass rush. And against the Bengals offensive line, I think they'll look better. But I'll say the same thing I said about the Raiders last week. When you get to Burrow, you got to take him down. You can't let him. And we saw it last week. Burrow's scrambling out to the right, almost steps out of bounds, throws a touchdown. Burrow has been making those reaction plays, those second chance plays as a passer, as well as the in the pocket stuff. So if the Titans do get some pressure, they have to take advantage of that. That number I always reference, where when Burrow's pressured, he is sacked, one of the highest percentages in the NFL. The Titans need to make sure that they take him down.
Yeah, and Burrow generally, like, he's playing at a level right now where he's capable of neutralizing anything you do, and that's part of the problem, right? The Raiders actually pressured him a decent amount in that game, 36% of the time, which is it's not like overwhelming. You know, 40 is a pretty good line. If you're above 40, you're causing some real problems for the quarterback. If you're, and it only gets sort of higher incrementally. If you're above 45%, that's almost game over for any quarterback in the NFL. Above 50, you might as well not even show up on offense, these kinds of things. So 36, it's a pretty big number. But Burrow played well under pressure. Like, it didn't cause him any problems. He had a PFF grade of 76 under pressure, had the touchdown pass, had a couple of sacks, which is not catastrophic for that number, but didn't have the kind of implosion. Like, his problem this year under pressure is he's been pretty productive, but his turnover-worthy play rate kind of spikes through the roof when you put him under pressure. So you can make him put the ball in harm's way. Didn't do that in this game. So had a really high average depth of target, was productive, had a couple of drops in there, which made the numbers overall look a little bit worse. But basically, like, if Burrow does that, it doesn't matter if you put him under pressure. But that's still your best bet, right? It's like Mahomes, you know, when, or Josh Allen last week. When they're playing like that, there's basically nothing you can do. All you can do is, like, what is the best way? What is our best chance of making him human? And for Burrow, it's definitely getting him under pressure and trying to force some of those mistakes. Doesn't mean they'll happen.
I think part of the disconnect, too, with the Titans' pass rush is it's a low time to pressure. So they're not getting there that quickly on average, and usually that means something's going well on the back end, right? You're covering well on the back end. That's where Kevin Byard comes in, Amani Hooker, two of the highest-graded safeties in the NFL this week. Byard got our Coverage Player of the Year award during our award ceremony, and then just solid across the board at corner with Jackrabbit Jenkins, Christian Fulton, his first full year starting, Elijah Molden, the rookie, stepping in the slot. It's going to be those guys. How do they match up with the trio for the Bengals? Obviously, Jamar Chase, but T. Higgins with Tyler Boyd, C.J. Uzomah, always good. Always good to just break out and do something and look like Gronk every now and again. So that is the key for Tennessee, figuring out how are they going to slow this Bengals passing attack, because that's how the Bengals are looking to win now.
And then the Titans generally, I think, are a fascinating team because nobody trusts them. Like, they're the number one seed in the AFC. They've won some pretty crazy games in terms of, like, opposition. When you look at that run, they beat Buffalo, Kansas City, Indianapolis, the Rams, and New Orleans back-to-back-to-back. Like, that was a five-game sequence where they won all of those games. But they've got losses to Houston. They've got, you know, they lost to the Steelers when they imploded late in that game. They've got some really impressive wins. They've beaten some very good teams. But they've been banged up for most of the year. Obviously, no Derrick Henry. They've lost each of their key receivers at various points in the season. It hasn't been impressive. And when you look at the kind of overall numbers, they don't rank highly in a lot of things. So, but we know that they're potentially better than that, right? Because all of their key players have been gone. The dudes that you call them. Like, preseason, we were having this discussion of, is this team too top-heavy? And if they lose one of these guys, are they in trouble? Well, they didn't lose one of them. They lost all of them.
And they weren't at all. The Titans don't make sense.
Well, they were. So they lost all of them at various points, and they were in trouble, but it didn't stop them winning. Like, that's the weird thing. Like, it didn't look good. It was ugly. They were somehow getting it done with these sort of ropey players and with a lot of data points that suggested, like, this is just not sustainable, okay? It's football, so you can go on a run where weird things happen and you win a bunch of games that you probably shouldn't, but this is not a long-term model of sustainability here. But it doesn't need to be, because all of a sudden, in theory, these guys are healthy again, right? Derrick Henry's back, A.J. Brown. Like, all of a sudden, the guys that you were missing that were causing the problems and making everything look bad, even if you were winning anyway, they're back. So what do you, like, how do you evaluate Tennessee? Are they, how much better are they than the team, than the sort of data points that we have? And is that enough to offset the fact that the winning was probably going to regress from that data set?
Some similarities to the Packers, the other number one seed, getting healthy, right? Getting players back. Packers and Titans had different seasons, but, you know, getting these players back. So the analysis being, hey, they survived. They've got some of their stars coming back now, instantly thinking that they're definitely going to be better. Not always the case, but I think when you look back at this Titans season and say, look at the games that they won. That stretch that we talked about, beating the Bills, Chiefs, Colts, Rams. Like, they beat a bunch of teams that are still playing this weekend. Even just down the stretch, after that disaster against Pittsburgh with the three fumbles on 10 plays, Tennessee beat the Niners 20-17. The Niners here in the final eight. They beat the Dolphins 34-3. Dolphins had a good team, good solid team. The Dolphins were hot, and they had the playoffs on the line. And the Titans beat them 34-3. And then they beat the Texans 28-25 because Davis Mills is unstoppable. And, yeah, he carved him up on the back end. But that's what makes Tennessee so difficult to figure out. They've got these high-end games where they held the Chiefs to three. They scored 34 against Buffalo, right? They've done everything. But they've also lost to the Jets and the Texans, right? They've done it all. So it is tough to know what to expect from the Titans. But they're healthy. I really think as much as the Derrick Henry storyline is an important one, this comes down to like Ja'Marr Chase and A.J. Brown. These absolute unstoppable stars at wide receiver. Are they truly unstoppable, or, you know, can defenses slow them down a little bit?
Yeah, Chase in particular. I mean, the Bengals this season have generally gone as Ja'Marr Chase has gone. When they've looked incredible, it's because he's been completely uncoverable, whether it's man or zone, and that's been phenomenal. But remember, there was that stretch in the middle of the year where he was okay, like wasn't dominating. There was, you know, the Jets. He had 32 yards against the Jets, under 50 against the Browns despite 13 targets. That was, remember, the game where like every time the ball went in his direction, something weird was happening. Like it was drops, or it was dropped then, or a catch, then a fumble. Like every time it headed in his direction, something bad was happening, versus earlier in the year, every time it went in his direction, something good was happening. The first time they played the Raiders, 32 yards. Now, okay, there's some touchdowns in here as well. 39 against Pittsburgh. Like there have been teams that have held Ja'Marr Chase to not an awful lot of production, and generally the Bengals will struggle when that happens. But when he's on, like, he's unstoppable, and the Bengals are really hard to beat when he's racking up a ton of points and can pick up third downs at will. So I'm not sure there's an awful lot you can do, because he's beaten every type of coverage, right? Man coverage, zone coverage, bracket coverage. Ja'Marr Chase has been winning whatever you do. If that's the kind of game you're having, the Bengals are going to have success and you have real issues. But there's no guarantee that's going to happen. Like, he might have one of those games where he's not a huge factor, and that would be a massive way that Tennessee swings in their direction.
All right, man, where are you going in this? By the way, I think I'll stick with my Vrabel take. Vrabel's the next Mike Tomlin. Good, consistent coach, never going to lose. Never going to have a losing season for the next 15 years. That's Mike Vrabel. I think the coaching advantage does go to Tennessee, based off everything we've seen this year. But
there's a pretty good chance that Zach Taylor wins Coach of the Year, just the way people vote on that thing.
You think so?
Yeah. But, like, if you look at the history of that award, there's a pretty, a very tight correlation to, like, wins versus preseason over-under win line. And Zach Taylor, I think, is by far the number one at that. He'll get credit for the fact that the Bengals were a lot better than people thought they would be.
Yeah. The vibes I get, since, you know, we're in and around town here, the vibes I get are that people are like, Joe Burrow's the catalyst here.
Yeah.
Burrow and Chase.
I mean, I think that's
catalyst.
Accurate, but yes. I don't think that's going to stop people voting him Coach of the Year.
So all that said, because we're just a homer company here from Cincinnati, I'm taking the Bengals to win and cover.
Wow.
The 3.5. By the way, last week's picks, I was 5-1 against the spread. You were 3-3. So I'm on a run here since we, at least over the last 4 weeks, 10-5, 10-5, 11-5, and 5-1. If you stuck with me, you'd be a billionaire.
A billionaire.
After my 4-11 week. Actually, I was 9-4, 9-4, 10-5, 10-5, 11-5, 5-1. Since my 4-11 game, bounced back strong. My 4-11 week.
So this is Titans by 3.5 at home.
Titans by 3.5 at home.
I like the Bengals to cover, but I think Tennessee might still win.
It's going to be that close, huh?
Yeah.
It's going to be that close.
We're going to have blowout games like last week. We're going to have close games. They're all going to be nail biters. It's going to be good. I've determined this.
Yeah? You think so? If there's a blowout, it might be the next one. But first, do you want a chance to win the ultimate game day feast? Whether it's football success or financial savvy, winning starts with asking us questions. Would you like to know what it's like behind the scenes with Al on Sunday Night Football? How about a need to know on your financial future? Western and Southern is teaming up with PFF's Chris Collinsworth to share insights that can help put you ahead on both your fantasy and financial scoreboards. Every submission earns you a chance to win the ultimate feast to celebrate football's favorite Sunday. We'll cover your catering up to $2,500, coordinate your order from a restaurant near you, and have it delivered on February 13th, 2022. Can I get relatives to sign up for this? How do we I kind of want the $2,500 feast.
You're the terms and conditions guy. Does it say anything about that?
I don't have terms and conditions here. Mm. I assume that they are somewhere. But that February 13th date, that's the big Sunday with the big game, the big football game thing. So, yeah, $2,500. That would be sweet. So don't forget to check out the Chris Collinsworth podcast and Western and Southern's Instagram for answers to the best questions each week. Here's how you do it. You submit your questions at westernsouthern.com/feast. One more time, it's westernsouthern.com/feast. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description below. And remember, with Western and Southern, you can rest assured on game day and perhaps have a $2,500 meal for the big game. If there's a blowout, Sam. I mean, it's the biggest spread of the week, but I think it could be this game. San Francisco 49ers at the Green Bay Packers.
Which way do you think it's going if it's a blowout?
Oh, Packers. Packers are favored by 6.
Okay.
So are you going to lean on this Packers are 0-3 against the Niners with LaFleur, right? No, the Packers won this week. Or you're saying in the playoffs, historically.
Aaron Rodgers hasn't beaten the 49ers in the playoffs.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
He's 0-3 against them.
Yeah, one of those games came in 2012.
Right, but the last one came like a couple of years ago, and they got annihilated.
It was 2019. This is a different Packers team. Completely sure. Different Packers team.
Yeah.
That was a fraudulent 13-3 team. This is a legit 13-win team.
Sure.
Would have been a 14-win team if they, you know, played it out against the Lions, I think, in Week 18.
Could have been a 15-win team if Rodgers didn't miss a game.
Could have been. Maybe we'll see that. Maybe we'll finally see Rodgers versus Mahomes. Maybe.
Maybe.
Anyway, Packers are favored by 6. It's supposed to be about 4 degrees in Green Bay. Last week, I felt good about the Niners. That was one of the 5 games I picked. I picked the upset against the Cowboys, cover and win. I don't feel nearly as good about the Niners in this matchup. Why not? 49ers have the highest EPA per play allowed on 10-plus yard throws defensively. The Niners have been much better defensively, I think, down the stretch here than they were earlier in the year. The pass rush has been fierce. Nick Bosa, hopefully he's healthy and, you know, he'll add something to the equation. Arden Key's broken out, all this stuff. I just don't think the Niners can stop the Packers. And I think the speed that the Niners bring to the table just doesn't, like, it plays well in the dome, on the turf and all that stuff. It won't play as well here in Lambeau. Slower turf. They're not going to stop Rodgers.
Okay. But are Green Bay going to stop them?
Yeah, enough.
Like, how does this game go? What stops this game going differently to the way it went the last time, which is San Francisco running all the hell over that Green Bay defense and the Packers not being able to stop it whatsoever all game?
Packers are going to commit. They're going to commit to it. They're going to commit to stopping the run.
But part of the thing is the 49ers make that much more difficult than
teams. It's easier said than done. But high level, the Packers just need to make a couple stops, I think. And a couple of those stops are probably going to come from Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo throwing the ball to them. I mean, this is what's adding up to me. I don't think the Packers stop. I mean, I don't think the Niners defense stops the Packers. And I think the Niners stop themselves at some point. And I don't think we see what we saw in 2019 where Jimmy Garoppolo goes 6-for-8 for 75 yards. In a winning effort. They're not going to run for 250 yards this time.
That's the way to stop Jimmy G throwing the ball, game away. It's just he doesn't need to pass.
Right. That's why I'm saying the Packers are like putting 9 in the box just so Jimmy G has to throw it a little bit more because he will throw 1, 2, 3 to you.
Yeah, like the 49ers offense is interesting because it makes that process a little bit more tricky. So the Bucs against Philadelphia were able to basically just run blitz the entire time. Like, we are going to stack the box, and we're going to fire downhill, and we're going to take away everything underneath. The 49ers offense actually makes that pretty difficult by the way they have a bunch of these play-action pass concepts built off the back of all these things. And the second you overcommit, all of a sudden, oh, look, George Kittle is within, like, he's 15 yards of open real estate, and there's nobody near him. Like, that's the kind of problem where if you decide, all right, we're just going to overcommit to the run, take it away. Like, they will kill you pretty quickly if you decide to do that. And they have all these freakish athletes. Like, they don't just lead the league. So they lead the league in yards after the catch, but they also lead the league by a mile in yards after contact per catch. Like, when you get the ball in the hands of Kittle, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, these guys bust through tackles and turn reasonably big plays into monstrously big plays because you just can't tackle them. So I do think there's a pretty good chance, like, this Packers defense I think since week 10 has been dead last in yards per carry given up, right? They have been the worst defense in the league against the run. This 49ers team can run the ball. They have freakish, unique athletes like Deebo Samuel, who's lined up in the backfield, breaking defenses from a schematic point of view. I think they're going to have some real success against this Green Bay defense. The key, I think, is, as you said, one, can they go a game without Jimmy G imploding or just trying to throw the game away? That seems to be a weekly just obstacle course for San Francisco, right? No matter what you're doing on offense, can you avoid Garoppolo tossing the ball to a linebacker or some other way, just making a disaster? That's a big thing. And then, yeah, like, I think the key to the game becomes the other side and how much this San Francisco defense can have success against Aaron Rodgers. Their pass rush has been legit. They really need Nick Bosa for that to continue to be the case. But Arden Key, as you said, has been a legitimate pass rusher for them. Eric Armstead has been really good. Like, they have pass rush, which has been covering up, like, the secondary, which is definitely a weakness. Green Bay, we get David Bakhtiari back now, which should be interesting. So I think, but that to me is the side of the ball that's going to determine who wins.
PFF power rankings over at pff.com. You just click on the game for Green Line. You get to see it's the nice breakdown. I'm used to the view now, a little bit more used to the view that since they changed it, because they packed a lot of information in there. But Niners number 6 defense from a power ranking standpoint, Packers number 4. So I think both defenses have had their ups and downs, right, throughout the season. There have been times, and that's what makes defense so tough to predict, there have been times where the Packers are flying around the ball, Rasul Douglas continues to, you know, turn the ball over and all this stuff, and they look great. There's other times they're getting smoked. Niners, I feel like, have had, you know, similar results. Remember, these two teams both played in week 3. Actually, both NFC games are rematches from week 3.
The entire playoffs is a rematch.
That's why Bengals-Titans is so exciting.
Yeah.
We didn't get to see that.
Haven't seen it before.
Have not seen that matchup yet. And then I think both NFC, you know, if it was if it's Bucks 49ers or Bucks Packers, we haven't seen that yet. So we've seen the Rams play both the other teams. So you got to root for things you haven't seen yet, right?
Mm.
I think we've seen every other AFC matchup, though. Whatever, all the combinations for the AFC Championship. But back in week 3, when these teams played Sunday Night Football, it looked like the Niners were kind of holding on. They make a late comeback, and then Aaron Rodgers just does Aaron Rodgers stuff. Deep dig route to Devontae Adams to get them to field goal range for the game-winning field goal. Incredible comeback by the Packers in that game. So it was a good matchup in San Francisco.
Yeah, and worth pointing out that it was that close, required that kind of, you know, pull by Aaron Rodgers to come out of it, and Jimmy G had 3 turnover-worthy plays in that game. Like, it's not going to be worse than that. If it's better than that,
they're on the road this time, and I don't know if I'm overrating the Colts. Like, the Colts not really going to slow them down, but a team that is predicated on speed. Remember a couple years ago, I don't have the numbers now. What?
Where are they predicated on speed?
The Niners?
Yeah.
Deebo, Ayuk.
Those guys aren't just Kittle. Like, that's not speed. I mean, they win with power as much
it's
as speed.
Speed and quicks, though. It's speed, quicks, power. They do it all, but they win by putting guys in space and running fast.
Also running over people and breaking tackles. And just like Deebo Samuel, like, he's fast, but he's also capable of, like, powering through tackles left, right, and center. Like, that's not being hurt by the cold.
The other part of this, and I want, you know, how much of this is a factor, the Matt LaFleur versus Kyle Shanahan factor. These guys are buddies. They're back, you know, coaching together for Washington.
That picture that was circulating of the three guys
McVay
on the coaching staff in Washington. Shanahan was offensive coordinator, right? McVay was QB's coach.
I don't remember the exact role.
Sorry, LaFleur, I think, was QB's coach, and McVay, I think, was tight ends coach. But, like, the three guys on the Washington football team's coaching staff at the same time. And then RG3 coming off his rookie of the year season, pro bowler as a rookie, was like, I'm not wild in your system. I think I want to push for something else. Good call.
Yeah, real
good call, RG3.
Have you seen the Mike McDaniel hype around here, 49ers offensive coordinator?
Yeah, he was the guy that gave the speech about how everything they do is sort of predicated on being unusual, like, by design.
Yeah.
And it was a smart way of articulating. Like, he was responding to a specific question about why they run toss plays up the middle as opposed to out wide where everybody else does it.
Right.
And his response was essentially, right, it's because everybody else does it the other way. That's why we do it this way, right? Because everybody is now, everybody else does it this way, so defenses expect it to go that way. So if you can buy half step because you do it something else, like that's worth it. That's a reason on its own to run things that way. And that essentially describes the entire 49ers offense. Everything they do is slightly different to the way everybody else does it for that reason, because simply being different makes you more difficult to read, makes you more difficult to play, to react to, and it's an endless sequence of tiny little edges. And it's like that Al Pacino speech in, you know, what the hell, any Given Sunday, where he's like, when you add up all those inches, that's the difference between winning and losing, right? Like, that's the 49ers offense in a nutshell. And okay, he didn't quite go that far, but like that, his answer to that question essentially articulated that philosophy.
Yeah, I just think it's McDaniel, very smart answer, good stuff. I just think it's funny that all of a sudden his interviews are going viral, and he's, you know, the hipster looking dude who's got some football savvy. He got a head coaching interview with the Dolphins, but the entire Shanahan family, they've got a broad tree coming from the Mike Shanahan tree here, and I think it is it's just interesting, man. We somewhat joked in the 2020 NFL draft. Packers were coming off that loss where they got destroyed on the ground. Jimmy G only had to throw the ball 8 times, and the Packers pivoted and said, we're drafting A.J. Dillon. We're drafting DeGuara as an H-back. Like, we're going to replicate this 49er system. It hasn't exactly happened, but I do think the A.J. Dillon power run factor that the Packers have added, going back to the Brandon Staley speech earlier this year, like, why do you run the ball? Forward-looking coach. The analytics say throw the ball 90% of the time, right? And he's like, well, no, you want guys to have to shed blocks and tackle and all that stuff. I do think the Packers have added this A.J. Dillon component. So, like, when you're defending the Packers, number one is try to stop Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. But if the other options are, you have a big physical Allen Lazard, you have a speedy Marquez Valdez-Scantling, you have Randall Cobb in the slot. He's supposed to be back. Valdez-Scantling's supposed to be, I think he's questionable. You have Aaron Jones, who's tough to – he's shifty and powerful. And then, oh, by the way, you've got a 250-pounder. Like, you have a lot of different styles of offense that the Packers are throwing at you as well that I think makes things difficult. I want to wrap up this 49ers offense discussion really quick because we've been raving about them. They've been fantastic. They scored 23 points last week, 27 against the Rams in Week 18 to get into the playoffs, 23 against the Texans, 17 against the Titans on Thursday Night Football. For as difficult as the 49ers are to defend, it's not like they've put 30 points on the board one time since Week 12. They did have a stretch of, you know, 30 plus there. I think they probably have to score 28 points, 30 points. They haven't done that in weeks. I think that's the challenge here for the Niners. They could have a really good game, and I think they're going to struggle to stop Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, I think they might as well. But I would ask, like, when was the last defense as bad against the run as Green Bay's that they faced? Like, Atlanta, Week 15, they put up 31 points that game. So I think that's a big part of it. Like, this team matches up very well with Green Bay's defense. Like, the last time they played, I know it's a couple of years ago, it's a different Green Bay team, it's a different 49ers team. But the 49ers team now, I think, is a lot closer to that team than it looked earlier in the season. And they got beaten so comprehensively by the 49ers in that game that it, like, completely changed the direction that Green Bay was going to go in. They were like, oh, wow, we need to pivot everything we're doing because this offense is supposed to look like that offense. It's from the same tree. Like, this is what we're trying to achieve here. And they had that draft that was so weird looking at the time, but was entirely focused on bridging the gap between them and the 49ers. I don't know that there's that. I think that that could happen again in terms of the 49ers' success because of their unique weaponry, their powerful offensive line, the fact that Green Bay's run defense is not good. I think that they should have some real success on the ground. The two questions in this game. One, can you weather the Jimmy G implosion? And two, can your defense cause Aaron Rodgers any kind of problems? Because you're going to need your pass rush to show up in a big way. And I think there's the potential that it does, right? Like, if Nick Bosa plays, which is key, David Bakhtiari hasn't played all season. Got a cameo appearance in like week 18, right? But again, like the Derrick Henry thing, I think you have to assume that David Bakhtiari now is not the real David Bakhtiari, who is arguably the best pass protector at his position in the NFL. So if you've got him, let's say he's 80% of the pass protecting monster that he usually is, you're going to go up against Nick Bosa? Like,
but Bosa,
you're going to find out pretty quickly how good he is.
Bosa has largely moved to the left side as well. So opposite Bakhtiari.
An even bigger mismatch.
Right, so early in the season, and for a lot of Bosa's career, he was rushing off right end against the left tackle. And I think he's like, hey, I see my brother Joey eating up right tackles. I would like to do that. So that's what Nick has done for a big chunk of the season. And I think absolutely that is a matchup in favor of the Niners as long as he's healthy and ready to go. But Bosa's got, including the playoffs here, 77 total pressures. Armstead's right behind him. Well, not right behind him, but behind him with 55. We mentioned Arden Key, who's really bulked up and been a guy in the interior with 39. It's not exactly the 2019 Niners defensive line, I don't think, but it's getting close.
Yeah.
That was when they were really good getting after the quarterback. Samson.
Have you come?
I know. Poor Jason. And DJ Jones is a guy. He's only got 21 pressures, 67 pass rush grade. He had a big sack the other day, but the NFL really likes him as we're hitting free agency. They keep telling us that he's going to get paid. So there are some players on that Niners defensive line who can get after the quarterback. And they've generally stayed healthy. Bunch of guys that have played 18 games over there. But I do think the pressure part is going to be the key. They're going to need to protect that secondary because that stat I talked about with 10-plus yard throws, because the throw was – in this stat, the throw already was made, right? So there are no sacks on this particular stat. So if you do get the ball off against the Niners, highest EPA per play allowed on 10-plus yard throws. But it takes away those passes where there's a sack. And, you know, the Niners have done a good job of taking the quarterback down. So
yeah, I mean, their secondary isn't good. They need – the path to success for the 49ers secondary is the pass rush being good, so they're not tested very often.
All right, where are you going? Green Bay, given 6 here.
I think the 49ers keep it closer than that.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going Packers. So you like the Niners. You're buying in to this whole city. You're betting on Jimmy G in this game.
No, I'm betting on everybody other than Jimmy G.
Just to touch on Jimmy G really quickly. He made some really good throws early in the game against Dallas. I mean, he does make good tight window throws. I mentioned he's got this Folesian ability to like make he'll make really nice plays under pressure. He actually had, for whatever it's worth, higher passer rating under pressure this year than Aaron Rodgers, for whatever that's worth right at the moment. But those kind of go hit or miss, right? Jimmy G making that quick throw. He's got the quick release. He'll do it with guys in his face a lot. And then sometimes it gets there. Sometimes it doesn't. There's the volatility to Jimmy G. There's a lot to like about his game as a distributor in this offense, but he has to cut down on those mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, so Jimmy G under pressure this year, right? So the numbers are weird. He's got 8 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, which is all right, whatever. Hasn't got a single big time throw under pressure. And it like people actually have a high rate of big-time throws under pressure because, generally speaking, things have broken down and it's either very good or very bad. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the distributions widen in terms of the outcomes when you're under pressure because all of a sudden you're sort of removing the in-rhythm short slant from the equation. Now, when you're under pressure, you're moving around, the secondary's moving around, your receivers are moving around, and you're either making a big play or you're getting sacked or doing something terrible. So generally, you would like Aaron Rodgers' big time throw rate under pressure is 8.4%, which is massive, would be, I think, second in the NFL overall. So he's got 10 of them. Jimmy G doesn't have a single big time throw under pressure this year, but he has 15 turnover worthy plays.
Wow.
And
we haven't talked about the Niners. So Trent Williams, best player in the NFL this year at left tackle. Tom Compton has stepped up at right tackle behind veteran Mike McGlinchey with his injury. But the Green Bay pass rush has been excellent, too, with Rashawn Gary's breakout. You got Kenny Clark in the middle. So if they put Jimmy G under pressure, you just mentioned all the volatility there.
And there, again, like, so remember the thing we've been saying all season long, the Packers are getting reinforcements, right? Bakhtiari's coming back. Jair Alexander's coming back. I think Zadarius is back as well for this. All of a sudden, the three players that they've been sort of focusing on all season long, at some point these guys are coming back. How close those guys are to their real selves is going to be interesting.
How about it's playoff time, so it's like legacy building time and all that stuff.
Legacy.
So Aaron Rodgers and his legacy, obviously one of the best statistical quarterbacks of all time. He's got a Super Bowl. How much does winning number two matter here for Rodgers and his legacy? And he even, I mean, he says a lot of things that I think he just tries to like mess with the media, but you know, he was hinting at, you know, I'm going to make a decision on retirement pretty quickly after the season, implying that it's on the table. And I think he's also implied like, hey, if I win it, I might, you know, be happy going out on top. How much of getting that second Super Bowl is important for Rodgers' legacy and the all-time pantheon of quarterback rankings?
I think it's important. Generally, I think obviously the threshold is, you know, getting a Super Bowl in the first place. Like Dan Marino gets crapped on as an all-time great quarterback because he never won one, right? Once you get one, you're like, you're now in the conversation. The next threshold is get from one to two. Now you can be talked about as a true all-time great. Peyton Manning winning his second ring was really important for his legacy, even if, ironically, he won the second ring basically as a passenger while being terrible that season. And just
people
getting,
don't even remember
right,
that.
Just getting over the hump, just getting that second ring was important, even though he was way better, you know, before. So for Rodgers, like you look at all the other people that have careers around when he was, right? That 2004 class, Roethlisberger, right? He got a couple. Eli got a couple. Rodgers only has the one. And when he won that one pretty early, so everyone expected him to be, you know, three, four rings deep into this thing, and he hasn't been. He got the one and hasn't been able to get over the hump since then. He's been blocked at the NFC Championship game time after time after time. I do think it's important for Rodgers' legacy to get a second ring.
These are just fun discussions, right?
This is, by the way, I don't care.
Right? Yeah, I know you don't care about this stuff, but people do, right? So let's say Brady's established himself as the best quarterback of all time. That's fun. There was times where people would debate Brady Manning and Brady Joe Montana and all that stuff. If Rodgers goes on a three-game run here, 14 career playoff wins, I think that ties Montana, right? With I got to check the numbers in a minute here. Montana might have 16. Second Super Bowl, I mean, it probably puts Rodgers probably in that Peyton discussion right now as far as the all-time rankings go and all that stuff. So I think all of it matters at this point as Rodgers gets a little bit older. He's 39, and we'll see. I think he steps up here in this game.
Yeah, I think a second Super Bowl ring starts to put Rodgers in that Peyton Manning, you know, the conversation of guys that are behind Brady, right?
Right.
Brady number one because the guy is going to play for a million years and just keep on putting every number into absurd places. Plus, he has all of the rings that have ever been contested. Then there's the next guys. Montana, obviously, there's the successful one with the rings. Peyton Manning, the guy with the numbers. Like, but there's a group of players that are all going to be in that discussion. Rodgers is now 10th all-time in terms of passing yards. He's like a year or two away from passing the Dan Marino benchmark, right? That was the big one for years. His touchdowns, like he already passed Brett Favre for touchdowns as a Green Bay Packer, which is pretty crazy when you consider how long that lasted. He's fifth all-time in passing touchdowns. I mean,
it is Montana. Brady has 35.
Yes.
Brady, Montana has 16.
I think there's a way. I think still, if the games fall the correct way, Brady could end this year with more playoff wins than any franchise, including ones he's played for.
That's crazy. He's got, so he's got 35. Montana has 16. There's a three-way tie with 14. Terry Bradshaw, John Elway, Peyton Manning. Rodgers has 11. So if they do this, if they make the Super Bowl run here and go 3-0, Rodgers is 14-9 in his playoff career if they do that.
Yeah, and he's fifth all time in passing touchdowns, but he has like the lowest interception rate in NFL history. So
right.
there are data points where, you know, when you're looking at his legacy, you can make the case that he is the second best quarterback to ever play.
Yeah,
Rodgers. But I think that ring would change a lot of people's minds, or at least put him into that conversation more.
Agree. I think there's something to going on those runs and, you know, being a part of those championship teams, whether it's not that it's all on the quarterback, but you are the biggest driver of that. The one last storyline here, will there be a point in the playoffs here where Matt LaFleur has a key decision, right? I mean, there weren't issues with Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur reportedly last year until pretty much that 4th and 8 where they decided to kick a field goal instead of going for it against the Bucs in the NFC Championship. That was a lot of the things that spurred Rodgers' upset offseason and trade talks and all that. Everything seems great. Once again, is there going to be this other like pivot point in Matt LaFleur's tenure as Packers head coach where he's got to be a little bit more aggressive and not, you know, and make the call that's going to win a game rather than lose one? And then that, you know, spurs off, you know, the offseason. All right, Rodgers going back to Green Bay versus going somewhere else.
Well, now if you listen to you, you think they're going to roll.
I think they're
it's not going to be a problem.
I think maybe we'll be discussing that as they play either the Rams or the Bucs in the NFC Championship. I think that's where we are there. So you're taking the Niners. I'm taking the Packers with the 6-point spread here. Of course, it's divisional round. That's what we're talking here for the NFL playoffs. And DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, they're celebrating with a huge odds boost for new customers. Counting down to Super Bowl 56, new customers can get 56-1 odds on any team. You bet just $5 and get 280 in free bets if your team wins. If Sportsbook isn't yet available in your state, you can still get in on the action of the divisional round. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings daily fantasy football contests. And DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Get 56-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet $5 and you win 280 in free bets if your team wins. It's promo code PFF for 56-1 odds at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, we're on to the Sunday games here.
Nice.
In about 50 minutes, that's about right. We're on pace. Rams at the Bucs. It's going to be the 3 o'clock game on Sunday. I don't know, is it 3? I don't have the number directly in front of me. I clicked off it. I wasn't ready. Yeah, 3. Tampa Bay by 3 here. Sunday afternoon. What are you looking for in this matchup, Sam? Another rematch.
Yeah. I think injuries are a big key in this game. Like Tristan Wirfs, his health is a massive factor. He went down the last game with an ankle injury. Wasn't it a high ankle injury? Wasn't that what they were?
Turned it in. they said high ankle. I mean, that is usually...
It's usually weeks, and he came back in the same game. Now, okay, he came back in a way that suggested he shouldn't have come back, and it might have been. But on the one hand, you're like, oh, he came back into the game. How bad could it be? On the other hand, you're like, high ankle sprain is usually several weeks out.
But offensive line's a little different, right? Because like a high ankle sprain for a skill position player, it's like, okay, you can't cut on it. You can't do anything. Not that it's easier to play offensive line, but maybe you can limit movement a little bit.
Yeah, saw exactly where it limits you, right?
Oh, I'm not saying last week was a good call. I'm saying like in a week's time, can they do enough to protect it that he can – all he has to anchor, right? He couldn't anchor. He was trying to anchor on one leg last week when he came back in. I think it's going to be a challenge, but maybe it's doable. It sounds like it's going to be a game time decision.
Right. I'm just saying that like – we saw the way he struggled when he came back is an indication of where it will cause problems in the same way it would cause problems for a skill position player trying to cut on it a week later. Like planting that foot in the ground and putting 600 pounds of force, you plus the 300-pound guy you're trying to block, into the ground through your ankle, he couldn't do that. Like he planted that foot and it just like it wouldn't bear the weight and he had to lift off and just got run the hell over for a sack. So Tom Brady is the only quarterback in the NFL that was pressured on less than 20% of his dropbacks this year. Now, Brady helped that, right? Second fastest average time to throw in the NFL behind only Roethlisberger. So it was a great kind of synergy between Brady getting the ball out of his hands fast, an offensive line that was the same five guys basically the entire season, all of whom are pretty good. We saw very quickly how fragile that is against the Eagles, right? Wirfs goes down, Ryan Jensen missed a few snaps, all of a sudden they're turning to backups, and Brady was sacked 4 times. So he went from the least pressured quarterback in the NFL by a reasonable margin to being taken down 4 times in a game when your right tackle disappears. Wirfs, I think, had the lowest pressure rate of any offensive lineman, certainly any tackle, in the entire league. So if he's not able to go, or if he goes but it's strapped up and he's just not the same dude, like that's a huge break for the Rams, who have some pass rush, who have guys that can get after the quarterback. So I think that's a big part. The other thing is, remember, no Chris Godwin, no Antonio Brown. All of a sudden, this Buccaneers passing offense is going to focus much more like it's going to run through a couple of guys now. It's going to be Mike Evans, who got double-digit targets in that game, and then, you know, a few for Gronk. They don't trust Tyler Johnson. They don't trust Scotty Miller. They don't trust Jalen Darden or anybody else on the roster, right? It's those two guys. And the Rams, like, this is where the Rams' strategy of plowing resources into three or four guys actually makes some sense. If Jalen Ramsey can take away Mike Evans, if Jalen Ramsey can force you to go somewhere else with the ball, now you've got a pass rushing advantage potentially with Tristan Wirfs there, and you're forcing Brady to hold the ball longer because you're taking away the guy that he wants to go to. That is a recipe for that Rams defense to have some joy.
Yeah, it's going to be there's a lot of you know, X's and O's discussion here, because in the first matchup, the Rams did a pretty good job on the Bucs underneath stuff, and I think, you know, it's still the Brandon Staley scheme that likes to take away the deep stuff. Raheem Morris running it this year. They play a lot of zone. They try to limit the big passes. I mentioned that stat about the Niners being worst in EPA per play allowed on 10-plus yard throws. The Rams are third best. We'll talk about the Bills, who are best there. So the Rams do a pretty good job of taking away the downfield stuff. But and so the Bucs generally adjust to that by throwing the ball underneath, where the Rams have been a little bit more susceptible, but they handled that really well in the first matchup, right? When you can sit on underneath stuff, work downhill, because if Brady doesn't have Tristan Wirfs, or he has just an injured Tristan Wirfs,
yeah,
who has to, you know, block Von Miller, Leonard Floyd, they have to block Aaron Donald on the interior, you can sit on the underneath stuff and just come up and hit hard and tackle. That's what the Rams did the first time. Brady ended up going for, you know, in the comeback attempt, threw for over 400 yards and made some nice passes down the field at one point in that first game. But I think the Bucs' strategy is going to be they're going to try to run the ball a little bit more than they did last week, and they're going to try to work the underneath game. But the Rams have, keep using the word ingredients, they have the ingredients, I think, to make a Super Bowl run here. They have the ingredients to slow down the Bucs' offense, which is get some pressure, don't allow big plays on the underneath stuff, don't allow big plays over the top. I think this is where maybe the Bucs losing Godwin, losing AB, ends up coming back to hurt them.
Yeah, it could easily. I mean, I really think that that offensive line has the potential to all of a sudden create problems that they haven't had to deal with for a while. Like, one of the keys to the success that Tampa Bay has had since Tom Brady arrived was that offensive line has been pretty rock solid. And when they've had injuries and they've had to reshuffle, it fell apart pretty quickly. Remember last year when Ali Marpet went down and they reshuffled a couple of players? They moved Ryan Jensen to guard. They brought in a backup center, and all of a sudden the entire interior was bad. And was it Joe Haig or somebody that was playing?
Yeah.
Like, gave up more pressure in a single game than Ali Marpet had given up for like half the season. When that offensive line has to go into the bench, it's not anything like the same unit, and it causes all kinds of issues. Brady isn't as good when he's pressured a lot more than he typically is, which is almost never.
Josh Wells is the backup that would play right tackle, but
right,
he got whooped because he was also hurt,
yes,
last week as
well. Hyperextended his knee.
Right? So he he's also – him and Tristan Wirfs officially questionable for the game.
I think it's pretty likely that Wirfs plays. The question is – I mean, that's a high ankle sprain, allegedly, yeah, which is supposed to keep a guy out for multiple weeks. Yeah, he's going to play, but what kind of condition is he going to be in?
Right. And so that's why, again, I think Brady's going to do what he can to protect his line with the quick passing game that's already the way they've been playing this year. But
and like,
will they be able to have any success doing
the
that?
The first thing the Rams should do if he plays is, like, snap one, bull rush him, and see how that,
yeah,
see how that holds up.
Like, absolutely.
That was where he struggled last week. Let's see how it is this week. And if that's a problem, you've immediately greenlit the game plan from then on in.
But then
if
you have to, you know, if the Bucs are going to send help to Wirfs, it's probably going to be more of a Gronk than a Cameron Brate. Gronk could pass protect almost like a tackle anyway. But you don't want to take him out of the passing game.
Right.
So maybe, but they might have to a little bit. But if you put attention on, you know, Von Miller and Leonard Floyd, Aaron Donald is in the middle of the defense as well. So a lot of the stuff's adding up to, I think, I'm liking the way the Rams are matching up here. The weakness of the Rams defense, though, is in the middle. With the safeties injured, they never really put a lot of resources at linebacker. That is also where Brady likes to attack. So I do think the Bucs can have some success there with Gronk. And what they do with Evans, moving him around, putting him in the slot, running vertical routes with him over the middle of the field. I do think the Bucs can have some success there, but will they have enough time to get that downfield passing attack going?
And they also might need to lean on the guys that they don't have faith in, right? It might need to be a Tyler Johnson game where he actually has a few big plays and can get on the same page. Or you might have to take Scotty Miller out of the doghouse and say, all right, you know, you screwed up a few plays, but we need you. Like, now's the time. So the Buccaneers, like that, earlier in the season we were sort of lauding them for how deep that receiving core was and how many guys they could hurt you with. And that was great when they were all there. But like a lot of these offenses this year, the depth, it's one thing to have depth in terms of in any given week when they're all healthy, any one of these guys can kill you. It's another thing entirely to be like, well, okay, if I take three out or if I take two out of the lineup, how's the depth now? Like, what happens when these guys have to step up into a different role? It isn't the same. And we've seen that with Dallas. We've seen it with Arizona. We've seen it with the Bucs. When they have to go turn to those depth guys, they're not as good. They're not as capable. They're not as trusted. And, like, Brady might have to trust the guys that he doesn't trust this week.
Leonard Fournette might be back. He was not back for last week.
Playoff Lenny?
Yeah, could have playoff Lenny. I do think they're going to want to run the ball. Brady was the leading rusher in the last matchup. So I do think they're going to want to take a little bit of the burden off the pass game. Keyshawn Vaughn has emerged as a pretty reasonable option for the Bucs over the last few weeks as far as running the ball and catching it out of the backfield. Giovanni Bernard was back last week as well as a pass catcher. So we'll see. I just think it's going to be a challenge for the Bucs offensively. All that said, Tom Brady, playoffs. He's played a 16-game scheduled worth of divisional round games in his career. 16 games. That's the old NFL schedule. So this will be 17, the new NFL schedule. Brady team's 14-2 in divisional round games historically. So when we talk about legacy stuff, that guy's playing with house money. Yes. But on the other side, Stafford. By the way, I like your Brady take that you were telling me the other day. Like, you're half joking for, right? Like, just he plays till he's 50 with like four different teams winning titles.
Yeah, like it was. You know, before there was a period where it was sort of Manning versus Brady and you could have a debate about who the best was and all this kind of stuff. And then sort of since that point, Brady has just been stretching this legacy to absolutely absurd proportions. And then last year, it was like, oh, we're going to see, we're going to get an idea of who was more responsible for that success, right? Belichick versus Brady. Belichick struggles his way with, you know, no real passing game, no real quarterback. Even this year hasn't kind of gotten back to where, to that promised land. Brady... Brady takes his talents to Tampa Bay and immediately propels an average team to a Super Bowl the first time of asking. You're like, okay, that's kind of silly. He could do it again this year, like if he goes back-to-back Super Bowls with the Bucks. But then he's a free agent, right? At 44.
He's got one more year.
No, voids. I'm pretty sure I think it's a void year. His free, like, he hits.
I think they have one more year and then a void potentially.
Either way, you now get to go like, all right, let's do it again. So now I'm like, he should just go on a barnstorming tour around the NFL. Like, okay, who out there needs a ring, right? I'm a guy that's for hire.
Lions.
I don't even need a lot of money, right? Browns. I'll take $20 million a year. I've got cash. I got the Brady brand where I write Brady on top of these jerseys and sell them for $200. I got cash, right? It's not a problem. Who needs a ring, right? I will propel whatever, like, downtrodden, depressing franchise you have, and we'll get you one, right? We'll help you out. So I just want to, like, who needs a ring right now, right?
He goes to Cleveland for a year.
Cleveland's a good one. Detroit never got one, right? Minnesota, right? They've been to what, four Super Bowls, never won one.
Go to Minnesota.
I'll get you a ring. It's easy. And I just want him to do that, you know, two more times, and then like retire at the age of 50. On the back of an all-pro season where he, like, leads the league in passing.
With 13 rings and he's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's
And then
time.
It's just like, you know what? I'm out. I'm bored with this now. We're leaving.
A hilarious picture that you're painting here.
I just think now I'm rooting for that. Like, it's past the point where, you know, there's any debate. Now I just want him to have the most silly career humanly possible.
So on the other side, yeah, so Brady essentially can't, I don't think, hurt his legacy with anything here. Stafford, on the other hand, just got his first playoff win. They got the monkey off the back.
13 years in.
He looked great. He only had to drop back 21 times, but when he did throw the ball, he was fantastic. He didn't throw an interception for the first time since week 14, for whatever that's worth. He did have a turnover-worthy play in there, but we had had games. He had had multiple turnover-worthy plays, four against Minnesota, three against Baltimore, two against San Francisco in Week 18. Stafford playing a much cleaner brand of football on Monday night. Again, only on 21 dropbacks, but can he do that again? Because, again, in the Week 3 matchup, Stafford was lights out again. I mean, not even him. The whole offense was lights out. He played well. The offense, guys were open left and right. He was not facing pressure much at all. And the Bucs could not cover these Rams receivers.
Yeah. Two times this season, Matthew Stafford has had fewer than 30 dropbacks, right? In those games, he's completed over 76% of his passes for over 12 yards per attempt with five touchdowns, no interceptions. I think there's a real element to which, like, that's not coincidence. Like, Stafford, if you can put him in, you remember that dream Minnesota Vikings Kirk Cousins game or the Seahawks, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll? If we just get this guy, if he's 22 attempts, 18 completions, you know, 250 yards and a couple of scores, that's our dream game. And then we run for 250 on the ground. I honestly think there's an element to which if you can put Stafford in that position, that's his dream. Like, that's where he's going to be amazing. That guy is going to absolutely cook and not screw it up. The question is, what happens when you ask him to do more than that? And generally, it hasn't been anywhere near as good. This becomes interesting because they absolutely ran all over Arizona's defense. Like, early in that game, they ran a couple of carries. It's like, what are Arizona doing?
Wide open.
Where are people going? The run fits here are a joke. Nobody's in the right gap. They're just chewing up yardage. And they were doing it for half the game without Andrew Whitworth. Like, this, it was just too easy. It's not going to be too easy against the Buccaneers defense. Like, they can defend the run. They have big bodies up the middle, like Vita Vea, who can stop the inside runs. They have speed on the edge. They can win in that way. The Rams are unlikely to have anything like the same volume of success on the ground, so they're probably going to need to pass the ball a lot more. Now, you know, that was the same thing was true in Week 3 when they played. Stafford had 39 dropbacks and had passed for over 300 yards and four touchdowns. But, like, it's going to be more interesting to see, because you open up, I think, the possibility for that Stafford, you know, mistake game.
Yeah, I think I view it the other way and think there are going to be... So I don't know that the Bucs, their pass defense was fine last week. I don't know if they were great, because Jalen Hurts just played a really bad game. So how much of that is dependent on, hey, I just think Hurts missed a bunch of throws. I don't think Stafford's going to miss that many throws. He misses his fair share of throws.
Yeah, it's not going to be
why
the same.
His grade isn't great. But Stafford also hits a high percentage of throws. And trying to cover Cooper Kupp and OBJ and just the scheme does a really nice job. And I think there are going to be some plays to be had for the Rams. And I expect Stafford to hit them.
It's not going to be the same game plan as against Philly, where they were literally able to just sell out with zero concern for anything else. Like, they stacked the line of scrimmage. They fired safeties down at the line of scrimmage, both pre and post snap, and they were saying, we're going to take away the run, we're also going to take away anything short you want to run. So wide receiver screens, forget about it, they're not going to work. Anything over, like, anything short is dead. If you want to have any kind of success, you're going to have to go over the top and win. And they were basically daring the Eagles to do that, and pretty confident with the idea that they wouldn't be able to, and they were right. They're not going to have the same game plan against the Rams, because I don't think they want to make that bet. They don't want to challenge Stafford and Cooper Kupp and OBJ to win over the top with a deep shot, because I think there's a pretty good chance they can. So I think they'll be more conservative about it, but they've generally defended the run that way in the past. Like, they don't stack the line of scrimmage with extra bodies, because you've got guys like Vita Vea that can two-gap or can just wreck the line of scrimmage inside all by himself. You don't need to run with eight or nine guys in the box. So I think it'll be a dramatically different game plan to a week ago, and we'll still be able to stop the Rams' run game without kind of overcommitting bodies to it.
So I think that's what it comes down to, right? I mean, both teams are pretty good against the run. The Bucs are good against the run when they want to be, when they're healthy, as you just laid out. The Rams are one of the best in the league. Greg Gaines, A'shaun Robinson, Leonard Floyd, Vaughn Miller, Aaron Donald. I mean, those dudes are good up front. It's going to be Brady versus Stafford. Very much so. In the past defenses, Rams have a better overall defense, and I think I'm leaning Rams here, getting the 3 points. I'm buying into the Rams hype.
You are going against playoff Tom Brady.
Yeah, this is a mistake.
Right?
I'm taking the Rams to cover it. I think they pulled the upset.
No, can't do it. Can't go against playoff Brady.
So you're taking the Bucs to win and cover?
Yeah.
Tampa Bay covers the three. Is it three? Yeah, three for you. And I'm taking the Rams. Potentially regretful over here. Tampa Bay minus three. You're taking the Bucs. I'm taking the Rams. Oh, boy. I'm buying in. Buying into the wild
card. You're buying in to playoff Matthew Stafford over playoff Tom Brady.
Yeah. It's different.
Wow.
Different world. It's a different world here. Brady has he's 5-0 now with the Bucs in the playoffs.
Yeah.
As many wins as Peyton has with the Broncos in his 2 years here.
Hmm.
Fun times. Last game. Right on time. Buffalo Bills at the Kansas City Chiefs. You ready?
Yes.
Is this the best game of the week?
I like all the games this week. I think this is a really good game of weeks. Is that maybe?
Week of games?
I don't want to split hairs on that. I like all these games.
You like all of them. Look at you. Kansas City's favored by 1.5. Last time we saw these two teams, the Buffalo Bills ran away from the Chiefs. Sunday Night Football. It was in Kansas City. I think that was a different Chiefs team. That was when they were just getting smoked defensively. At one point, again, Josh Allen had 7 completions for like 215 yards in that game. And I know we just saw superhuman Josh Allen last week, and I said, that guy can't show up every single week, but he kind of did on that Sunday night game against the Chiefs the last time we saw them. Maybe he just steps up against conference rivals only, and then he lays an egg against the Jaguars when the other Josh Allen's on the field. But can Josh Allen do it again? 38 degrees and clear, so no crazy weather for this one in Kansas City.
No, just moderately cold. This is fun because – remember the narrative last year? Josh Allen was coming off his incredible season, and there were a few people that were like, oh, is Josh Allen on Patrick Mahomes' level? Like, is this the rivalry from now on? And then didn't really happen in that game. I mean, Allen last week was completely unstoppable. Like, remember, that was in freezing conditions as well. It wasn't even like just one of the greatest performances you're ever going to see from a quarterback. It was like that in the freezing cold in Buffalo in the middle of winter. It was madness. And I think there's a pretty good argument that says that's not going to happen 2 weeks in a row, because it's literally the single highest grade we've ever given to a quarterback this season, like in any game. So immediately, are you going to back up the best game of the year with the next best game of the year? No, of course not. So the question is, how far does it slide? But right now, Allen is playing better than Mahomes has this season. Mahomes has not been the guy that he's been the last few years this year. Now, look, it's not like he sucks, right? There's like a down year for Mahomes is still an absolute boatload of production, a ton of touchdowns, all those kinds of things. Plus, he's still in an offense that's really productive. So even if he isn't playing that well, the numbers are going to be great. So it's not like we're talking about like a complete and total mismatch at quarterback. But I do think heading into this game, Buffalo has the better quarterback. At the moment, right now, for this game. Overall, sure, you'd take Mahomes based off the body of work, but right now Buffalo has an advantage. They also have a better defense by a distance, I think, even though Spags can dial up individual game plans. Yeah. And at that point, it becomes really interesting because you now need Mahomes and that Chiefs offense to have like a special game just to keep pace and just to do what they do. Like, this is the game that Buffalo has built this thing for.
In the last matchup, Mahomes dropped back 63 times. Does that include negated plays? Because I saw something that had him 70. But it was 33 for 54, only 5 yards per attempt, 272 yards. Couple picks, fumble in there. I think, again, I don't only like to compare matchups. I think that's... It's a little lazy to only compare matchups and say, well, here's what happened last time, and these are the things that'll change, and here's how it'll be different. You still have to look at it through the lens of what the Chiefs were going to do, what the Bills are going to do. But the Bills do have a really good pass defense. And we saw the other special play that's going to be tough to replicate is Micah Hyde's interception. Like, the Bills, did they just play a perfect game overall? And they're going to have to do that again in Kansas City? I think so.
I don't know if they have to, but yes, they did play a perfect game, and that's why they absolutely stomped the Patriots like they weren't even there. I don't think they need to play a perfect game to beat Kansas City, though. Like, if they play a perfect game, I think they win comfortably. If they fall somewhere short of perfect, they can still win the game.
Yeah, the thing for me is, yeah, I don't want to just look at last week, but I think this has been trending for a few weeks now. My big question with Kansas City, when they hit their lull, you'd come out of the game and Travis Kelce was averaging under 10 yards per catch, and hit Tyreek was averaging under 10 yards per catch, and it's like, where's everybody else? Where's the help? I think the help has showed up in recent weeks with Byron Pringle, with Mecole Hardman, even DeMarcus Robinson getting in on the action last week as well. But Pringle has been fine in the end zone. Hardman's been excellent after the catch, and we were raving on Monday about Jerick McKinnon in the backfield. With all this space that Kansas City's offense creates because of Mahomes, because of their playmakers, because they do have a good run-blocking offensive line, get the ball in Jerick McKinnon's hands, and he's creating both as a receiver and as a runner. I think they're back to being this offense that is so difficult to cover that, and when that was the case, Mahomes didn't have to put up 80 grades and 90 grades from a PFF standpoint. He was good the other last week, but he would have subpar average games and they'd still put up production. They'd still have high EPA because that's a team stat. I think the Chiefs are back to that, and they're gonna move the ball well against this Bills defense, as good as the Bills are.
Huh. All right.
I'm leaning back toward the Chiefs here.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am like Mr. What have you... if I was overrating the wild card weekend, I'd say the Bills are unstoppable. They're going to the playoffs. And that can be the case. The challenge... I think the Bills in a one-game setting, you could say in any one-game setting, they're the best team in the NFL. They could be the best team in the NFL. That's what they did last week. Best team in the NFL. But they got to do it three more times to win a Super Bowl. And it's that level of consistency that's a challenge.
Yeah, but I also think they're sort of showing that they're one of the best teams, period. And their baseline of play is going to be really high. The thing is, I think that Buffalo defense is going to do to Kansas City the thing that caused them problems all season long. Now, I think the results are different now because I don't think simply forcing them to be patient and doing this thing, 60 dropbacks, right? Let's say that happens again. They can force Kansas City to have 60 dropbacks on offense again. I don't think that you're – in most games this season, if you force the Chiefs into that, they would be making a ton of errors. Mahomes would have a not a good game. There would be turnovers. It would be a disaster, and that's where they got into the trouble. I think they are better. They fixed themselves, relatively speaking. They aren't going to get into the same panic mode where everything tightens up and they know they're going to make a turnover or a mistake somewhere along the line and everything stops working. But I do think that's still the best way of stopping them, quote-unquote, slowing them down, forcing them. Remember, when we were talking about before, like in years past, when the Chiefs' offense was unstoppable and the Chiefs generally were unstoppable, it was like, what is the best way of playing this team? And I kept believing that the Baltimore Ravens had a really good chance schematically of beating the Chiefs, even though it never was working, by just keeping the ball away from them, frustrating them, right? Chew up clock yourself and make it so that they know that they have to execute on offense and score because they're not going to get the ball back for another 15 minutes if they don't. I think what you're doing now is essentially creating the same mental state of mind, but with them having the ball. So instead of like being aware, like they're going to score at will, it's going to be quick, they're going to put up points, and then you go to answer. Now you're like, no, have the ball. But if you're going to score, it's going to take you 10 plays and 8 minutes to do it. And if you screw up, we're going to score and you're going to have to answer. Like, I think that teams are now forcing them to essentially frustrate themselves by having to execute and be patient and causing problems that way. And remember, Mahomes has put the ball in harm's way a lot this year. 22 turnover-worthy plays, 7 games, I think, with multiple turnover-worthy plays, including the last 2 weeks of the season. I think if Buffalo does that to him, if they make him be patient all over again, Mahomes is going to give them some chances.
Yeah. I do think the Chiefs have played that style better, though, as far as taking the underneath stuff. And Mahomes...
Yeah, they're not going to panic anymore. But I still think that A, they don't want to do it, and B, it is the best way of causing them issues because they don't have... You can hide a lot of imperfect execution if you're going to throw a bunch of 50-yard touchdown bombs, right? If you have to execute these 10-play drives, your execution needs to be a lot more on point than it probably has ever been for Kansas City.
The other thing that's interesting about this matchup is you keep making the point, hey, the Bills are building to beat the Chiefs, right? That's how their team is built, right? They're this team that power run game can exploit them a little bit, but they're going to be really sound on the back end and make you earn it and all that stuff. However, would this be a game where the Chiefs, who pass more above expectation than any team in the league, a higher percentage, would this be the type of game where the Chiefs, because of their offensive line, which is excellent from a run-blocking standpoint, would they actually run the ball? Because we've seen that in this matchup as well. When they played in 2020, in the first matchup in the regular season, we saw the Chiefs run all over the Bills because the Bills were inviting them and also unable to get off blocks. The Chiefs could do that as well. Now, that might play into the Bills' favor because, again, it's just another version of shortening the game, right? And just saying there's fewer possessions. Our offense has to just be a little bit more efficient than your offense as far as putting points on the board. So I think we could see that as well, where the Chiefs decide to run the ball a little bit more and impose their will up front and maybe work a little backwards and set up the pass off of that. All I know is Mahomes has played much better. Denver game, I think he was a little hit or miss and made some bad decisions in there. He's graded in the green 4 out of the last 5 weeks here, and I think you're right. The Raiders got them back on track.
Yeah, they really did. Like, the rest of the NFL has a lot to – or the Raiders have a lot to answer for,
but
to the rest of the NFL by essentially getting the Chiefs back in their groove.
Mahomes' two worst grades since week 11, both against Denver, by the way, which is it's a whole separate discussion. But we've been talking all year, like, what's the blueprint? They figure out the blueprint, you know, in Kansas City. The guy that was coaching in Denver, Vic Fangio, like, had the defense that would at least slow down Mahomes. And technically, Brandon Staley's running that same defense. They haven't had as much success. It's just fascinating to me that it looked like, hey, Mahomes might be – they might be catching on to him. Two coaches in his division, 4 times a year, he's going to play this offense that slows them down a little bit, and Denver just got rid of Fangio. And they might bring in Dan Quinn, who, you know, runs the offense that Mahomes can torch.
Yeah.
I mean, the defense that Mahomes torches.
Friend
anyway.
Of the show.
Friend of the show, Dan Quinn. Good luck in your coaching search, Dan. Anyway, what else? We talked about Josh Allen and how good he was last week. Is this just the best new rivalry in the NFL? Bills Chiefs, second back-to-back years now playing in the playoffs.
Could be, yeah. Absolutely could be. I mean, Joe Burrow could force his way into that conversation. All of a sudden, this is like the new wave of quarterbacks that we've kind of been waiting a while for, with the Rodgers, Breeze, Brady, you know, those guys as they got old, and the class of 04. We'd kind of been waiting for that next group. Like, when were they going to show up? And this is it now.
This is it, yeah.
I will say that, like, Josh Allen hasn't been quite as good this year as he was a year ago, but with each passing week, he's closing the gap, and the overall, he's getting a lot closer. I will say, though, that one thing that does seem to be different with Allen now versus even when he was playing last season at his peak, it feels now that he's better in the big moments. So whatever about the playoffs, generally, as being a higher kind of plane of existence, but when they need a play, Allen's like, all right, I got you. Don't worry about it. Like, he himself individually takes it upon himself to just get it done when they need the play, right? Think back to the second Patriots game when they were trying to protect the lead, make sure that the Patriots couldn't get back. It was like 4th and 1, and Allen just keeps the ball, like does almost like a naked bootleg. Instead of a dive up the middle, just takes it on himself.
Leaving over people, reach. Like, he's just
right, but it was like
finding a way.
The Patriots had it defended. They had a linebacker out there. The cornerback was keeping contained as well. And Allen just goes, I don't care. I'm going to juke Jamie Collins out of his shoes. I'm going to sidestep J.C. Jackson. I'm going to power through the contact of whoever it is coming in to try and pick it up as the third guy. Just, all right, done. I got it. And then same drive, I think he had a big pass as well. There's other plays where it's like the drive after the Micah Hyde interception against the Patriots. They were facing, I think, 3rd and 4 in the red zone. And it was like, again, this is a couple of key moments in that game that might have changed the game flow and made the game go in a different direction. But like 3rd and 4, and this, I wrote an article about this, like the things that you can do with Josh Allen at your quarterback that you can't really do with almost any other quarterback. So 3rd and 4. They go empty, right? So spread everybody out. You manufacture this ridiculously light box. There's now 5 guys on the Patriots in the box. five guys on the offensive line to block them. So Allen just takes the ball and plows right up the A-gap. And it's like, I don't even care if you beat one of these offensive linemen because I have 255 pounds. I'm just going to plow forward for 3-4 yards and pick up the first down. Like, there are things you can do now with Josh Allen, the quarterback, that open up almost impossible to defend scenarios for a defense. And it seems like every time they need a key play, they turn to one of those and Allen just answers the call and makes the play. If that's a consistent thing, like if they do that in this game, the Bills are so hard to stop.
Yeah, I think that's the part of the Josh Allen story that I wasn't necessarily expecting, was the dependency on him. And especially the dependency on him as a runner, both whether it's scrambling or as a design runner. We had talked about the playoff narrative with Josh Allen. He was very good in the Colts game last year, the wild card round. But divisional game, tough wind and all that stuff against Baltimore, has a 59 grade. And then in the AFC Championship last year against the Chiefs, 56 grade. So Allen, you know, coming into this year, remember he struggled in week one against the Steelers. It was like, all right, what's going on with Allen? His last three games, his last few games haven't been great, but he turned it back on throughout this season. Was unbelievable last week. I mean, if he plays 90-plus ball, I don't think the Bills are losing. But you could say the same thing about Mahomes. You could say the same thing about a lot of quarterbacks, Stafford or anybody. But of all the teams in the playoffs, I think maybe the Bills rely on Josh Allen more than anybody, just because their run game also runs through him as well.
They've built they have built this offense on the shoulders of Josh Allen. You know the last time that Mahomes had a game grade above 90?
I don't.
The 2020 AFC Championship game against the Buffalo Bills.
Last year's AFC Championship.
Hasn't had a single one this season.
Yeah, Mahomes has been generally really good in the playoffs outside of the two Super Bowls. His non-Super Bowl playoff games have been outstanding. He was not... He made a nice comeback against the 49ers in that Super Bowl, kind of salvaged even his grade or any of his production numbers with some of the throws down the stretch. But up until that point, he had 4 turnover-worthy plays in that game and obviously was not very good against the Bucs last year in difficult circumstances with the offensive line getting crushed.
He doesn't have a grade above 85 this year. Forget 90. Like, hasn't been within 5 grading points in 90 game.
He is due. It's just an awesome matchup, but I'm leaning toward the Chiefs have come back, that they're back where they need to be. And here's the interesting thing. Is this the more difficult game for both teams? Are both teams going to look, no offense to the Bengals or the Titans, because the Titans beat both of these teams.
This was supposed to be the AFC Championship game again.
The Titans make no sense, because the Titans beating the Bills and beating the Chiefs are why we're here, right? It's why this game, the Titans earned the right to play the Bengals in the second round and have home field advantage if they make it to the AFC Championship. But this could be, you know, again, Eric Eager called it, 40, you know, this is new 49ers Cowboys. You can call it Patriots Colts or whatever. Sometimes those teams played in the divisional round instead of the conference championship, right? I mean, the Patriots and Colts did at least. So it's just one of those weeks. This could be the two best teams in the AFC facing each other a round earlier than expected.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's set up. Like, this is the AFC Championship game before the AFC Championship game.
No offense to our hometown Bengals. No offense to Titans fans. You guys, you have excellent teams. I'm loving this weekend. It's going to be great. But I think this is the game of the weekend, and I think the Chiefs at home, they get it done. Cover the 1.5, so they win by at least 2. You going Buffalo here?
Yeah. I'm going to buy into them springing an upset.
It's kind of an upset. They already beat them.
Right. I mean, they are underdogs,
albeit
on the road for by less than 3. So,
look at that. 4 games.
Yeah.
It's only an hour and a half show. Now, what do we do?
Easy.
What do we do?
Now we out.
That's it?
Yeah.
You go home early?
Uh-huh.
And let our listeners go home early?
Sure.
It's going to kill our YouTube numbers.
Yeah?
It's going to kill them.
That's a shame.
Not if everybody gives the thumbs up, though. Give us that thumbs up on YouTube. Make this thing go viral. Tell your friends. It's the best NFL podcast in the land. That's what we do here. But we appreciate everybody tuning in. We'll do so Monday, we will recap these games, obviously. We'll talk all about them. And then we'll get into some off-season goodness. We'll only have 2 games to preview next week. And we'll get into some free agency. We'll get into some draft and team-building efforts and some more season-ending autopsies and all that fun stuff that everybody loves. Somebody suggested on Twitter, the charity drive, a 24-hour, you know, charity drive where we just break down every team. So you give like 45, what's that, like 45 minutes per team to get to all 32? 45, 50 minutes per team for 24 hours straight?
Ish.
Think we could do it?
I think we could. I don't think we want to.
What if we just did 18 hours?
Somebody also suggested that we miss a trick by that whole email we read out about, you know, the driving charity thing and the micro transactions or whatever. We never, at no point did we ever call it a charity drive.
A charity drive. Right. Yeah. It's a drive for charity.
Exactly.
Quite literally a drive.
Never made the
Let's
connection.
Not do that for 24 hours.
No.
But sit in this chair. We'll sit in these comfy
Who
chairs
was it?
For 24 hours.
Beckett found a baseball game that was like 6.5 hours of hell.
Yeah, yeah. Red Sox Orioles. How about Red Sox Dodgers?
18 inning, 6 hour game.
Yeah, it's two games, basically.
I don't want
Did
that.
I tell my 17 inning game story?
Probably.
Yet on the show?
Almost certainly.
You want it again?
God, I don't. I really don't.
We played in a 17 inning game one time, but it was like, I told it before.
I bet the people loved that.
But it was the last, it's the last leg of a road trip. Like, the bus is warmed up, ready to go. We're losing 8-7 in the ninth.
Mm.
And one of my teammates hits a home run to tie it. And I am so hungry. We're starving. I'm just so hungry. All I want is the post-game meal. It's all I want. I just want to get into the clubhouse, post-game meal. And then nobody scores for the next 7 innings.
You're like Keith Gillespie, like, bummed that somebody else scored and you lost, dumped 50 grand
yeah,
on the bet.
Like, our minor league team record in Double A. Like, nobody cares. Plus, it was in Portland, Maine.
Did
in
you have
April.
A chance to go out there and throw the game to make sure it didn't go to?
I did, and I threw two scoreless innings. It did help me a lot.
Could you not just go out there and be like,
there's just, no, no, because my ERA matters. Yeah. My stats matter. But we're in Portland, Maine. In April, it's 35 degrees out for baseball. It's not good for baseball, Sam.
Okay.
35 degrees. I pitched like the 14th and 15th innings, I think.
I'm aware of that, having seen you pitch in 35 degree weather.
Yeah, I'm sitting there probably topping out at 74 back then. I was 92, 93 back then. But then we had two position play. Like, a third baseman had to go in for both teams, like position players. And then there's just like we gave up a run in the 17th inning and lost. It's the biggest waste of 2 hours.
Yeah.
It was. 2.5 hours. All I wanted to eat.
That basically sums up baseball, doesn't it?
We should get that game. Can we get that game on radio to listen to, for Sam to listen to? Our 17 inning game. Talk about the 90s Jags, Steve. The chat wants us to fill it with 90s Jags discussion.
Yeah. Great.
How about that 96 run that they made beating the Broncos?
How about that?
All right, anyway, that's it. That's the end of the show. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. Enjoy divisional weekend, and we'll be back Monday morning recapping all the games. Thanks to everybody for tuning in.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.